I'm Gab. He's Jules. Blue skies over West London, albeit a little bit chilly.
Very chilly.
It's Champions League time. Things are getting real, man. We have a tremendous show for you because, Jules, we've had so much. We've had dramatic last-ditch heroics from Milan. We had Real Madrid getting it done. We had Barcelona in the rain not getting it done. A daisy cutter from Thiago. And, of course, Michael Carrick's debut on as Manchester United manager. But we got to start. Manchester City and Paris Saint-Germain. Sorry, I got to go there. No.
Look. I know.
This is box office, right?
Yeah, of course.
Manchester City, home. You got Pep against Pochettino. You got Manchester City at home against the M&M. They're all out there. Now, I say they're all out there. In that first half especially, it looked to me like two of those three guys were only out there in body and not in spirit.
It was difficult. In a way, there's nothing new, Gab. I think what we saw yesterday on Wednesday night, we could have predicted before the game. We knew the strength and the weaknesses, especially the weaknesses of that PSG team. The fact that in that front three is still not really working, certainly not defending, not much running either.
Which you weren't going to expect.
No.
But you expected it. So what I expected this season when he came, and I said, all right, tactically this is going to be difficult.
Yeah.
But I said, look, build up a big lead in the Champions League, in Ligue 1, then you get into the Champions League, in the knockouts, the guys will be motivated, they give everything. And then I think to myself, you're away to Manchester City, why do you have to play all three of them together in the league at the weekend? No, I like
that,
to think
that didn't make a difference to play them in the league.
Why?
What difference did it make? Well, they were not tired yesterday.
I would like to think that they would have been more motivated and more focused.
I don't think
so. Well, then how do you explain it?
This is a team that is dysfunctional, that could not play, that still has no identity, no patterns in terms of passing, movement, can't beat a press. I mean, the amount of time, especially in the first half, where they try to play out from the back on the goal kick, Navas to Marquinhos not knowing what to do, to Kimpembe, even worse. Then what do? You play to Herrera.
Give it to Paredes. Paredes can pass the ball.
They can't. It's not even that the press was good. I mean, City pressed well, of course. But PSG was so dreadful with the ball. I was fuming at Pochettino for having been there a year and still that team not knowing what to do with the ball to try to play out from the back against a team like City. And you know what? You could put Liverpool or Bayern or Chelsea instead of City last night, and it's the same results, it's the same performance. There's a huge gap between them and the top teams in Europe. They're nowhere near, not even ready.
All right, those are harsh words. We're going to get into that a little more. But I want to, I think we need to give a little shout out to City here because for me, in this game, no Foden, no Grealish, no De Bruyne, no complaints, right? Hey, I feel like elsewhere when people are missing, you know, before the game, everybody's always like, well, we're without someone. No, he doesn't care. These guys aren't there. Doesn't matter. He plays Zinchenko in midfield. I know he came off and he was criticized.
That was a mistake. This is a Pep special. That didn't work out.
It's fine, but you're trying it.
No, you don't have to try. You should not try.
Well, you want to know if this is something that you can turn to at some point.
Not in that game, Gab. Do it in the Premier League against
the Rubbish beauty, team. Though? You say not in that game. If City don't win the group, normally you're like, well, you don't want to finish second. Actually, City can't face any of the Premier League teams. The only team I think that would really give City a scare right now are Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
And that's it. So, in a weird sense, it really made no difference to them. And yet, they were still exceptional. But they put on a clinic with so many players missing.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, you talk about player missing. I think Verratti was the biggest miss of all for PSG. But for City, you can just replace and add and take away, and it's still good. I mean, Walker, we've been saying, Cancelo has been, of the two fullbacks, the one the most involved with the ball all season, and yet the key in the game on Wednesday night is the Walker run on City's first goal. The ball from Rodri, I mean, the way they switched the play to Mahrez. I know PSG were bad, really bad, but City were fantastic again. I think we wrote a piece on the website and trying to rank the four English teams that are top of their group in the Champions League. So, okay, United is fourth. But then how do you rank the three, Liverpool, Chelsea and City? Who's been the best for you in the Champions League? Because there's not much in them to separate them.
You would put Liverpool, I think, because they have a tougher group. But there isn't much in it. There really isn't. And I think City's ceiling is higher than Liverpool. So I feel like, you know, Liverpool, they can't get that much better City could actually get even better if everybody's
Chelsea
fit.
Chelsea as well can get better.
Chelsea can get a lot better. I just think they're starting from a much lower point right now. A word on Pochettino, because obviously, let's go back to this. Let's remind people about Pochettino's camp. Talk to the media. And again, I'm not lifting secrets on our industry, right? People pay other people to go and speak to journalists. And so somebody was on the phone to everybody on Sunday. Well, you know, Pochettino wouldn't say no if they... Okay, fine.
That's the strategy. That's the first stage of the strategy.
That's the first stage of the strategy. But I'm thinking if people are watching this, they would come to the conclusion that, man, this team looks nothing like the Pochettino we remember in the good times at Spurs.
Yeah.
And then, is it a dysfunction of Pochettino? Is it not enough time?
Yeah.
He didn't do himself any favors there.
No. And we go back to the show on Monday, where already I raised a few concerns that I have on the fit between United and Pochettino. And I think Pochettino is great on many levels. But I do think that he needs time, or he certainly builds a team or a squad in a certain way.
Over time.
That I'm not sure a top club can afford to wait that long. Tottenham is okay, especially at that time. United and PSG, I'm not sure.
All right, Jules, I'm gonna go back to this because you said, oh, it's nothing new the way they played. And I'm wondering, is there a way that you can play modern football with Messi and Neymar?
There must be.
In the front three.
There must be.
You could argue it's been done before at Barcelona, so we know you can.
But you put Guardiola or Klopp in charge of that team, and it's a very different team. I'm convinced of it. And this is not me being critical or picking on Pochettino. I'm super disappointed by what he's done or not done in 11 months that he's been at the club. I'm really disappointed. But maybe he's got his reasons, maybe there's circumstances, maybe he doesn't feel he can work the way he wants to because it's a very special club in the way it's run and all of that. Okay, I get it. Tuchel was, in a way, quite similar. But I'm still very disappointed. I still think there's more to do. And I'm not just saying asking Messi to run and press and press and press. The amount of sprints made by the City players last night, it's 164. Yeah. The sprints made by PSG is 110. So already you can't, I get that. And
it's like 50% more.
Yeah. But there's still, I'm sorry, when you've got those kind of players, even with Verratti out, you should be able to play up from the back.
But Verratti was on the bench. Was he not fully fit?
No. Yeah, he could not play.
So why took him along? Because he wanted to spend some time.
He was there.
Manchester.
Yeah, he did the press conference on Tuesday night. He got injured in the last training on Tuesday night, which is very unfortunate. Right. But you should see more from that team. So in the second half, remember the Neymar chance at 1-1. This is a 43 passes, 2 minutes and 9 seconds move when City don't touch the ball. So they can do it. They can do it. They can play City out of the park. They can move the ball well so that the opposition can't get near them and then create a chance and should have scored the goal, because I'm not sure what Neymar does with the finish. He goes wide when the goal is in front of him. There's only Ederson to beat. So they are able to, but why so rarely? There's basically the goal where the build-up is interesting.
There was a chance in the first half when he's through over the, like, at the very end of the first half.
Yeah, but that's a press, and then you get the ball and you 3v2. Right. But I'm talking
Stones, I think, give the ball away.
Yes, exactly. But in a placed attack where you've got the ball for a length of time against City, they did it, but only twice. And I really struggle. I struggle with some of the substitutions, taking Gay off to bring Di Maria and unbalancing even more a team that is already unbalanced at 1-1.
I'm assuming at that point, though, he said, let's go and win the game.
Why? I don't know.
Because the draw does him no good, right?
Well, the draw, you still have a chance in the last game.
Well, because you think City are going to lose to...
Well, they go away at Leipzig and you're home to Bruges. I know who has the more chances to win.
I know, but Jesse Marsh will be back for that game.
Yeah, and when he's there, it's not the same. No, but I don't know. I was disappointed. And
see, what I struggle with, and this is the age-old thing, and over the years I've had the opportunity to discuss this with a number of managers, right? The whole eternal conflict of football, the individual versus the system.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reality is Neymar and Messi, everything that you do to put them in a system t- take something away from them as individuals. Now, it doesn't mean that it's a bad idea, because you could make the same point, frankly, look at many of City's players, right? You could make the same point about Foden, about De Bruyne, about Mahrez. But it's so hard to get that balance right. And I look at Pochettino and I look at the players he's worked with before, even as great as his City teams were, you know, the most talented, creative individual that he had on his really good Spurs teams was Christian Eriksen, right? Everybody else is more, I'm not saying he's just like a foot soldier, but, you know, it's Son, it's Kane, it's people who execute what they do and follow instructions. So in some ways, I think that's a lot easier. Probably. Here, where you have two people who are so creative and you want to give them license, it's so hard, I think, to know how to give the right level of license.
Yeah.
The other thing with Messi is, as I mentioned before, they're both from Rosario and whatever, ha, ha, ha. Messi arrived, what, mid-July? No,
yeah.
Later.
Yeah, no, early August, 10th early, of August.
10th of August, sorry. I mean, you didn't have any time to work with him. You've lost him for three international breaks.
Yeah, no, but it's Messi. Why are you still playing him wide? I don't understand. He can't run that like he used to be. He can't be the right winger that he used to be. This is not. There's a couple of sort of half counter attacks in the game against City where you see he doesn't have the pace he used to have, even running with the ball. Play him centrally. And by the way, playing centrally, you know what will help you beat the press, because he would have been really helpful on Wednesday night to sort of soak up the pressure, build that press because of his technical incredible ability.
That I think is a really interesting, because we saw him in his last season and even I think the year before as well with Valverde City.
Yeah, almost as a second striker. Centrally.
There were times when he played. Yeah. You know, people were used to saying, "Well, Messi goes where he wants." What I saw last night, actually, Messi doesn't go where he wants in Barcelona, because he's cognizant that Neymar is on the other flank as well, and Neymar and Mbappe, more so Neymar, they're not going to go and adjust their movement based on where Messi decides to wander to. So you almost lose that the fact that before you would see Messi popping up centrally for extended periods and then maybe going back wide. You don't have that. And again, this is the kind of stuff you should be working on in training. I'm going to defend Pochettino because I like him personally, but there's no question I think that he's got to be disappointed with the way his team plays. And the other aspect of this is that to carry Messi, Neymar, and Mbappe, you got to put guys in midfield who, you know, hard hat guys.
But
right?
You cannot win anything. You cannot win the Champions League with defending at seven. This is impossible. No one does it.
Defending at six, because Hakimi, you know.
Yeah, but well, even at five if you want, because Nuno Mendes. So unless they sort that out and make Messi and Neymar and Mbappe realize that they have more to do defensively, it just, if it's just the bare minimum, but a bit more than what we saw on Wednesday, which they did a bit, I guess, in the reverse fixture in Paris, where they were more courageous defensively, let's put it that way. But otherwise, they can't win. And a lot of people have hit me up on Twitter, and please do so, saying, but is this team even manageable? Would Zidane want to go? Who would want to go and manage the front three where you know already it's flowed in a way? As talented and amazing as they are, if you feel that you cannot make them work together because they won't defend, because you're only going to be 7+3, even attacking-wise at times. I don't know. I want to think that you could work with them. And just to finish quickly, the irony of it all, Gab, is that Neymar was never planned, well, certainly when he arrived in 2017 in the summer, never planned. But can you really pass on signing Neymar when you get the call from Neymar's dad saying, we want to leave Barcelona, we want to come to you, come and pay the release clause? So you go for it. When Kylian Mbappe said to you, Monaco are forcing me to go to Real Madrid, I don't want to go to Madrid, it's too early, I want to go to PSG. You cannot pass on an 18-year-old Kylian Mbappe in the summer 2017. So you go for it. And when Jorge Messi calls you in the summer 2021 to say, we're leaving Barcelona, can you afford us? Can we sign for you? You cannot pass on Messi. So in a hand, they've been almost a poison present. But could you really have said, no, we can't sign you because it's going to be to the detriment of the team or the balance of the team or the balance of the squad? Could they have really done that? Could they have said no to Neymar?
No, but you know what they could have done? And look, that is a big factor in Leonardo's defense. On the flip side, you could also make the point, maybe I don't spend combined, what is it, $25 million a year on a backup goalkeeper and Sergio Ramos, who never plays.
And Draxler and Herrera and all the others.
You know, these free signings aren't free. Maybe some of these great players who've come through the Paris Saint-Germain youth system who are now at other teams playing and scoring and contributing, maybe those guys would still be around.
Yeah.
It's a difficult one. I do think, in Leonardo's defense, in Pochettino's defense, you still had, you know, these guys aren't robots. I'm talking going back to the M&M.
Yeah.
You had Mbappe with the trauma of all the craziness that happened in the summer with the bids and everything. You had Messi with the trauma of leaving Barcelona. You had Neymar, who I think really does care when he plays for Brazil, especially, with the trauma of saying, oh my God, we were beaten on home soil by Argentina. All these things, and there is a psychological element to this as well, which I think is hard to root out. All these players also have the World Cup coming up, which, you know, in Neymar's case and Messi's case, could well be their last World Cup. So I think all these things on top of each other, just a lot for Leonardo and Pochettino to unpack. And if on top of that, they're not seeing eye to eye all the time, that makes things even tougher.
Yeah.
Going to City, what really impressed me about this, there was one point in the first half where, you know, sometimes you watch games and the same stuff keeps happening again and again, and you can see it at home on your television or in the stadium, and you wonder, why aren't the players seeing this? And correct me if you saw this. City kept attacking on the right. Nuno Mendes was there by himself against Mahrez, Bernardo Silva in the half space with the right wing, and then Walker helping behind. And, you know, again, Walker's not Cancelo, but, you know, if he's got time and space, he's not going to give the ball away. Over and over and over again. Is this on Marquinhos to say, guys, let's go and help out? Is it on the midfielders? Should somebody have shifted over? Should Pochettino have noticed this from the bench? Because it was great. It was almost like Sterling wasn't there on the other flank. Everything was going down that side.
It seemed that the idea that PSG had was to make sure that, because Messi really is the one that defends the less, I guess, that for Cancelo and Zinchenko and Sterling on that whole sort of left-hand side, that left triangle for City, that Herrera will come and compensate a lot on that the PSG right-hand side then. So Hakimi would not be too exposed to Cancelo and Zinchenko and Sterling and all that. The problem is, okay, that's one thing, but you've left the whole left channel completely empty for poor Nuno Mendes, who's already struggling defensively. I mean, the kid is 18 or 19. He's got so much to learn. He had one amazing season with Sporting, and now this is on him. And Neymar not working hard enough. Gueye or Paredes, whoever was supposed to be on the sort of left-ish hand side, not doing their job. Kimpembe, who I think has really struggled. I mean, in some way, he when you want him to be solid and go for it, and we can do that. But the rest, the lack of football IQ is staggering. And you're right. How many switches from the City left to Riyad Mahrez every single time with acres of space? And I was like, and I did think, okay, surely at halftime they will sort this out.
Right. What I think makes City so devastating is that they can exploit stuff like that. And it's not like, you know, in most teams, you've got 2, 3, 4 people who are deputized, who have the authority, the license to go and make those decisions on the fly, to go and hit that difficult, low percentage pass, but that they know they can pull off in that moment. He's created a climate where the number of people who can make those decisions, which ordinarily might not be obvious, but that you kind of, it's like, if you're an NFL fan, it's like, you know, it's like a quarterback spotting a defensive misalignment and calling an audible, right? The number of people who can do that, have the skills to deliver it in this City team, it's Cancelo, it's Rodri. Like, it's not just Gundogan and Bernardo Silva. So they come at you from so many angles.
It's the degree of adaptability with the ball that they have. So but it's because they have all those patterns of play. So we can use the width, we can go central, we can have overlaps, we can have 1-2s, we can have triangles, we can have all of that you work on. Their structure, and again, yesterday at times, their position and the distances between all of their players was pure poetry. But for me, the biggest one is, in the first half at some point, PSG, as we said, been so bad trying to play out from the back. But one time they do it well, somehow. It's Marquinhos to Hakimi, and Hakimi plays a 1-2 with Herrera, and that works. The next time, what do PSG do? The same thing. They're thinking, hey, it worked once, let's do it again. So Marquinhos to Hakimi, Hakimi to Herrera, and Herrera plays the 1-2. Except that this time, Cancelo knew that they were going to do it again. Ready, intercepted the ball, and that was it. So it's that degree of adaptability that what they do with the ball, and they can change in the variety. I think they have even more variation in their game than 2 or 3 years ago under Pep. And then without the ball, they can scan everything that the opposition do and adapt to it. So, oh, you've done this, no problem. We've got this response to you. Oh, you're doing that, don't worry. We've got that response to that move. And I just think it's perfect. It's like a chess game. I know we've said it many times, but in chess, you have your own game, but you also counterattack what the opposition, the other guy against you do. It's exactly the same.
To move this forward a little bit to Pochettino and the United link, United fans watching this will be like, you know, what the hell? This is not the Pochettino we remembered, as I said before. And then the biggest and most obvious thing is that there's very little pressing on this team. And in fact, one thing I want to ask you about, not that I'm obsessed with him or anything, is Gini Wijnaldum was a pressing machine when he was at Liverpool. Again, last night, he was on the bench.
He's injured. Could not play.
Why is he... I'm wondering now, did Liverpool see this? Do we know about his injury? And that's why they didn't offer him a new deal?
I'm just imagining,
if he was still at Liverpool, because he's played very little this year.
No. He's played a lot. He
hasn't relative to his wages?
No. He's played a lot. It's just he had a muscular injury, pretty much the same one as Verratti in the last training on Tuesday night.
But I'm used to Verratti not playing very much. I'm used to him playing. Last season he played every game for Liverpool last season.
Yeah, probably.
Or close to it.
Yeah. No, he's played a lot. He hasn't been really. I mean, it's taking him a lot of time to adapt. But he would have been useful in that game, of course.
If you have Wijnaldum and Verratti in for Gay and
Paredes, yeah.
Right?
Or Herrera and Paredes. Because I think he likes Gay as a third man with Wijnaldum and Verratti.
All right. Does this end up different?
No, I still think City are too good. Guardiola said after the game, I mean, just quickly, Pochettino after the game said, oh, we are really improving. No, you're not. You're not. I'm telling you right now, Poch, you're not improving. And then Pep says, this is a similar game to the reverse fixture that we lost. You can have really good players and play well and still lose a game.
Of course.
But the way they were themselves again last night was immense. So, no, I think Verratti and one of them would have made a difference to the PSG team. I still think the gap is too big. And City, even with Pep doing the Pep roulette and Stein Zinchenko, which, by the way, I can tell you is not going to happen again in big games like this, they were too good.
Why are you so down on Zinchenko? He's an attacker.
Because it's crazy. Because I'm on French radio before the game, before we get the lineup. Right. And I said, oh, you know what? Something that Pep seems to do less now, since the Champions League final, he's tried those crazy ideas that
he has. Why is it so crazy? He's done it. He hasn't done it there much for City, but he's played in that position for Ukraine. He started out as a central midfielder.
Yeah, but he played him yesterday, and it was not working out.
Yeah, no,
it was terrible, and he took him off after 50 minutes. But it's okay. They won the game. I'm just saying, you do the Zinchenko against Bayern or Chelsea or Liverpool in a semi-final, you pay.
No question there. Somebody asked me this: if Pochettino were to move to Manchester United today. And I think this is the point about the Pochettino needing time. Mm. If I go through this player for player, I mean, would he be working with a worse set of players, especially next season when Pogba's gone too, in terms of the technical level of the players, if you compare these two teams?
Yeah.
Because if he's working with a worse set of players, and on top of that, Cristiano's still there, which means that it's almost impossible to press, or certainly to press the way you play.
Yeah.
You pressed when you were at Spurs. This really becomes a very long-term project.
Yeah. But you would think that if United go and get Poch, is to give him time to build also the right players that he wants, or the profile, at least, maybe not exactly the names that he wants, but the profiles that he wants.
So then we're talking 23-24, when we first see a Pochettino team at Manchester United, hypothetically.
Yeah, but he can win without without being fully the
win what the League Cup, the Europa League, what?
Well, I don't know, but you could. This he's still a very good coach.
He's still an upgrade over Solskjaer, is what you're saying.
Yeah, definitely, and Carrick and whoever else they link with for that interim genius idea. But he will need time for sure. He will need time for sure, and players who suit his style of playing more than maybe what they have now, because you're right, I'm not sure how many in the current United squad really fit the sort of Pochettino style that we saw at Spurs.
See, because in terms of the present, in terms of right now, if we play combined 11s, I'm not sure.
But it depends what kind of combined 11 you want. On pure talent, there's not many United players compared to PSG players. But for Poch, maybe Poch sees it differently. Maybe he would rather have Sancho and Rashford and McTominay ahead of Herrera, Messi, and them. I don't know. But certainly he wants to leave the M&M to go to McTominay, Sancho, and Van de Beek. So there's a reason why, and I think it goes beyond, you know, the history and the legacy and how big United are. He must fancy that squad more than the PSG one, I guess.
I don't know. I'd just be very, very careful. And also if promises and assurances are made, they're going to be made by Ed Woodward, because Joel Glazer doesn't speak.
And Ed will stay a bit longer, kindly of himself, to stay a bit longer.
You think he's going to stay?
I think now he's going to. Hey, hang on. Why would I leave on 31st of December? Let me stay a bit
longer. Sorry, Richard. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Poch. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Benfica hold Barcelona to a scoreless draw in the driving rain at the Camp Nou. But given Haris Seferovic's late miss, should Barca count themselves a little bit fortunate?
Well, I wonder if Seferovic has slept even since Tuesday night. I mean, that miss is something else. We know he's not the most clinical of strikers, apart from when he plays against France in the Euros. But apart from that, we know he's not. But that was, even in his standards, that was bad. Because I'm not even sure he wants to put the ball above Ter Stegen the way he does. But it's okay. You've done it. Now you just literally have to toe-poke it in the empty net. And, okay, you've got, I think, Jordi Alba probably coming back. And you see him in the corner of your eye. But this is an unbelievable miss. I'm not sure Benfica deserved to win the game overall. Because they didn't play great. Although they had a really... Ter Stegen had to make a really good save on the corner. Vertonghen, I think he was. But Barca didn't play great either. They had some good moments, and you can see what Xavi is trying to do.
We saw Youssef Demir.
Yeah, Youssef Demir as a sort of right wing back, right winger kind of thing, who hit the crossbar on a sort of Messi-esque kind of move. But I don't think it was enough from Barcelona, not enough from Benfica, but that chance for Seferovic, I mean.
Are Barca out?
No, they're not, but they will have to go and win in Munich. But probably, yeah, which is not given by far.
Especially since Choupo-Moting, unless he recovers from COVID, you know, he's...
So it's going to be a B team, but maybe not so much a B team from Bayern. Real Madrid beat up Sheriff 3-0 and remain top of the group. Gab, two convincing performances in a row now for Carlo Ancelotti.
Yeah, look, I often look at performances more than results. Yeah. I thought they played really well. Yeah, only Sheriff. Yeah, Sheriff would beat them, and Sheriff could have, I think, almost knocked them out if they'd won, right?
Yeah, this game. Exactly. Yeah.
So I think this was good. David Alaba, nice free kick. We know he can hit them. Yeah. Toni Kroos as well. Yeah.
And Kareem, of course, the dream.
Yeah, well, speaking of Kareem the dream,
He was found guilty in the Mathieu Valbuena sex tape extortion scandal. He was sentenced to a 75,000 euro fine and a year in prison. Of course, that has been suspended.
Yeah.
Jules, he's going to appeal. At this stage, does it mean anything? I mean, he's just appealing to clear his name. And in practical terms, if he doesn't commit a violent crime, he's never going to serve this time in prison. And the reputational damage is already done, right?
And it's a story that's been going on for 6 years. This happened in 2015. So I thought that he would want closure and just take the verdict. It's not what they wanted because he still says, I'm innocent. I didn't try to blackmail Mathieu Valbuena or put pressure on him to accept the blackmail from his friend, etc., etc. So I can understand why he wants to clear his name because he said, I did nothing wrong here. But maybe you should just say, you know what, I accept it. I take the verdict and then I move on and everybody can move on.
What I never understood about this is why is Valbuena pressing on with this? Why doesn't he just...
He wants justice. He said he's been the victim. It cost him his place in the national team, for example. It cost him a lot of damage. I don't know. I'm with you.
Make the sex tape.
Yeah. Or don't leave it on your phone the way it did. Manchester United beat Villarreal 2-0 thanks to late goals from, what a shock, Cristiano Ronaldo. And, more of a shock, Jadon Sancho, his first one of the season. Gab, this was Michael Carrick's first game in charge. Anything look different to you?
Honestly, no. I mean, I don't...
He said it before, you know, I work with Solskjaer, it'd be the same.
Yeah, and I thought the approach was the same. And, okay, you can say, oh, whoa, but they didn't lose 4-1. Well, no, because... But I'm saying in terms of setup, in terms of approach, I thought the first half from United was really poor, actually, and it finished 0-0. This was a game they wanted to win. I don't think Villarreal had players missing, and I don't think that they approached the game. Unai Emery, I thought, didn't necessarily approach it the way you would have wanted it to. In the end, this game is a draw, minus Cristiano popping up and doing his thing.
And the like he's done mistake.
And sorry?
The ruling
and
Geronimo mistake,
Rulli coming, misreading it. I mean, as we've seen time and time and time again, where would this team be without Cristiano, I think is the obvious question. Maybe they'd be pressing a little more, but I think if the rest of the players play the way they do, it'd be bottom of the group. So I think it's as simple as that. Now, Carrick, of course, is the caretaker manager.
Who,
we're told, will be replaced by an interim manager until the end of the season, who will then be replaced by a permanent manager.
Permanent
until he gets sacked. According to the reports, other than Pochettino, United are also considering, for the interim manager role through the end of the season, German guru Ralf Rangnick, former Barca boss Ernesto Valverde, Lucien Favre, last seen at Borussia Dortmund, former Lille and Roma boss Rudy Garcia, who was there, actually, I think, for French TV.
He was indeed, He got a bit annoyed of all the questions from his co-coms on United links.
And our boy, the very handsome, Paulo Fonseca. Any of these guys get you excited?
Is there a point in common between all of them, or is it just a complete mess and you just go for all the names that you can find that someone throw at you? Maybe you'll be next. Maybe you're
I believe
get a call
they're all unemployed right now, and I think is what makes them approachable as interim managers.
No, Ralf Rangnick, who's in Russia now.
Okay, all right.
So he's not unemployed.
Sorry, no disrespect, but
no, but still. But what's the direction there? How can you be after managers with such a different array of qualities, philosophies, ideas? So you don't have really a direction. You just say like, hey, let's hope that one of them says yes. Because by the way, and you know how much I hate this caretaker interim permanent triangle, I think it's an insult if you go and see Lucien Favre for everything that he's done for this game and said, hey, Lucien, do you fancy just coming for 6 months? I think all of them should say no to the six-month interim deal.
The one which intrigues me, somebody suggested this on Twitter, what about Ralf Rangnick as interim manager, and then in the summer, although I'm not sure he wants to do this, he moves upstairs and becomes director of football with wide-ranging powers and Darren Fletcher as his apprentice stroke sidekick.
And John Murtough makes the tea?
I don't know what the hell John Murtough does. Maybe he can be an apprentice too. I don't know. Okay. That would be pretty cool. I think that would get me a little excited.
The Glazers would never have Rangnick. I mean, Rangnick needs to run the whole club.
Of course. So, Paulo Fonseca, I'm a big fan.
He's our favorite.
I'll say this about Fonseca. As you bring him in interim, he plays a completely different brand of football than what Solskjaer tried to serve up. Although this is United. Remember, this is the team that decided they brought an interim manager, and after a few good games in March, they said, give him the job! You know, by the way, one last thing, which I had completely forgotten. Solskjaer won 14, I think, of his first 19 games in charge, something like that. And, of course, they always had Paris. He also won just two of his last 12 games, which I think kind of went under the radar in that first season.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm wondering if they hadn't given him the job, would they have kept them around given the way the season ended? They were six when he replaced Mourinho, and they were six at the end of the season.
That's true. Atalanta let a 2-1 lead slip against Young Boys and need a late Luis Muriel on his first touch as well, free kick to get a point. Gab, that has to be frustrating. And it's not the first time that they concede like goals like that that takes points away.
Yeah, Luis Muriel, it reminded me of like in the NFL when like the field goal kicker comes on and like
that's all he's done all game.
Yeah, it is frustrating. It's Atalanta. You got to take the good for the bad. Shout out to Young Boys though, because they said we're still in it. We still believe. We're going to keep going. Well done to them. After three defeats in the first three games, Milan's comeback to qualification is on as they beat Atletico Madrid 1-0 thanks to a late Junior Macias goal. Jules, this is pretty remarkable.
It was, Gab. I will let you in the next question talk about the incredible story of Junior Macias. But before that...
Macias!
That's what I said. What did I say? Macias? No, Macias. But before that, they completely deserved to win that game. I was very disappointed by Atletico, and I will say it again. I don't understand why Simeone has this sort of moment where you think, let's just defend, we are home, I don't care, let's just defend, we can qualify if we win, I don't care, let's just defend, it's driving me mad. But Milan deserved it completely, and well done to them. They could do an Atalanta, remember, or even a Spurs, who had very little points after the first three games in group stages and still managed to go through. I really hope they do. But again, so poor from Simeone and Atletico.
Shout out to Ibra off the bench, though.
Yeah. So, Gab, tell us about Junior Macias' incredible story.
It's a tremendous story. I'll have a column on this coming up later. This is a guy who nearly died when he was 18 years old in a car accident when he was driving drunk home through the countryside from his brother's wedding. He's a guy who, you know, grew up in Belo Horizonte, played for Cruzeiro at youth level, then kind of realized, you know what? I'm not good enough. And they said that you're not good enough. And they sent him down to like the seventh tier of the Brazilian pyramid. So he said, screw this. I have a wife and kid. I got to make a living.
Yeah.
So he moves to Italy, undocumented, starts working. He worked in a construction site, in a demolition site, where his job was to go and salvage bricks and polish them for 20 cents a brick. Wow. I mean, literally, this is what he did in his spare time. He played football with some Peruvians. He was spotted there. Eventually, his papers came through when he was 24, and he started moving up the chain. He started in the fifth tier of Italian football, moved up every year, and now he's hit the apex.
I love that. That's why we love these games so much.
It is fantastic. 4 years out of the game, this guy was. Incredible story. 31 years old, and might have another goal in him at some point. Bayern stay perfect in the Champions League with a 2-1 win away to Dynamo Kiev. But Jules, I imagine that since you like your tech years, you want to talk about Robert Lewandowski overhead.
Oh, yeah. I love Kings of Command's finish and the dummy by Thomas Müller. But the overhead kick in the snow in Kiev as well.
It's just set up nicely for him.
Yeah, of course it is. But, he often is. But well done to him. His ninth goal already in this Champions League. Sticking with Bayern, he also feels like karma. But Joshua Kimmich has tested positive for COVID, Gab. Of course, he didn't want to get the vaccine. And that made the headlines. Isn't a good look now?
No, it's not a good look because one of the things he said when, you know, and look, I defend his decision. If he faces the consequences, now he's facing the consequences. 14-day mandatory quarantine. He can't test negative to get out. You know, he said, but I'm taking all these other precautions. I'm tested daily. I'm clean. I'm healthy. I'm like, great. It's not going to stop you, and you've increased your chances by not getting vaccinated. Ajax also remained perfect as they went 2-1 away to Besiktas. Jules, this time, though, they needed to bring Sebastian Alle off the bench to win. All he did was score two goals to make it a record 9 in 5 Champions League games.
It's an incredible campaign for him.
He's like, Robert who?
Robert who? He's never played Champions League football before.
And he doesn't need to.
In his first campaign, he already has 9 goals, which is as many as Jari Litmanen scored for Ajax all those years ago, which is the record for the club, but in the whole campaign, not after 5 games. It's crazy. He's, I think, only the fourth player to score in his opening 5 games of the Champions League. He scored as many as Erling Haaland had in his first 5 games last season with Salzburg. It's just incredible numbers. And he even had a third one that was disallowed for a narrow offside by David Neres. Still no Lukaku, but Chelsea destroy Juventus at Stamford Bridge 4-0. Gab, was this a good Chelsea or bad Juve?
Sometimes more than one thing can be true. I thought Chelsea played really well, just like they did at the weekend. You know, they didn't. The Werner came off the bench. Lukaku, obviously, precaution still out. He's just coming back from his injury. But didn't matter. They created so many chances, so especially after taking the lead. Mm. So much focus on the fact that they've got the kids from the academy and whatever else. But this was just a comprehensive team performance for Juve. The reality is,
what was the idea? Just defend the whole game?
It was like the first leg. It worked in the first leg, and let's try it again. And I've said this before. There is a ton of work to do. They can beat you by defending and grabbing a goal like they did against Lazio, but at the minute you ramp up the opposition, the minute you have to actually do something, right now this Juve team are really struggling.
Yeah.
Liverpool were already guaranteed first place in the group, but they nevertheless beat up Porto 2-0, and we had a peach of a Thiago Alcantara daisy cutter, and we found out who Morton was. I thought Morton was Morton's
soul. I saw him play. He came on for the last 10 minutes against Arsenal, so I saw him already.
I'd seen him too.
I'd heard of him to... with a reserve, he looked good. I mean, this was a B Liverpool team. They're already top of the group, already qualified, all of that. And Porto were good. If Otavio scores the huge chance that he has in the first half, it could be a different story. But what a goal by Thiago. Incredible half volley if you haven't seen it. And staying with Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp got a bit annoyed, Gab, during the press conference after the game.
Yeah, I'm going to stick up for Klopp here. So a journalist pulled him up on the fact that he called the African Cup of Nations a little competition. He was taken completely out of context because what Klopp had said the day before is, they said, oh, there's no more international breaks until March, you must be happy. And he's like, well, there's little competition where we lose Mane and Salah. Now, obviously, meaning like he used little ironically, and he's like, no, there's a big competition where they go away from the month. Within that, the context of that, Klopp got really annoyed, and I think justifiably so. I don't think that was fair at all, the question, the way it was put to him.
I agree.
Surely just a coincidence, Jules, but there's no Jesse Marsh on the bench for Leipzig now. Come on, we mean, even though he went to Princeton, come on, let's give him a break. They pull off a 5-0 win over Bruges as our boy Christopher Nkunku bags another two. Why is this team so up and down?
It's crazy. When you watched the game last night, you think, like, what could have been? It could have been amazing, and yet it's so inconsistent. But Nkunku, one of the players of the season, without a doubt. Inter beat Shakhtar Donetsk 2-0 thanks to a brace from Edin Dzeko and secure a place in the last 16. Is it really 10 years since they last did that?
Amazing, but true. 10 years since they were last in the knockout phase. Look, they played really well. They showed maturity. They could have scored two or three in the first half. Well done, Simone Inzaghi. Yeah. I didn't believe in you. You're proving me wrong. Forgot to mention this earlier, but before we get to my next question, Jules, I do need to know, for the record, that I think Inter might have had the tallest back three
in the
history of football, where little Milan Skriniar was the smallest of the three, alongside Alessandro Bastoni and, of course, cult hero Andrea Ranocchi. Yes, Mr. Froggy himself. Anyway, let's move on. Sporting win their de facto playoff against Borussia Dortmund 3-1, and they're also through to the knockout rounds. Jules, this was ugly for Marco Rose.
It was painful to watch from Dortmund point of view. Really painful. I know there's no Haaland, and of course you're going to struggle.
No, they've got loads
of injuries, and Haaland especially. But
why should he make the defense play so badly? Why should they keep moving around? I mean, that first goal, come on, man.
I know, it's terrible. The defending, the organization, the lack of effort at times. For them to be knocked out in a group like this, I know Sporting have been refreshing to watch and great, and they run so much in the attack and the intensity. I get all of that, but this is huge failure for Marco Rose and for Dortmund, which, by the way, financially is going to hit them hard, especially if there's restriction coming back in the Bundesliga, where you might have a restriction crowd in the stadium, which would hit them even harder as well. It's just not a good time at all. And also, for us who love the game, having no Erling Haaland in the last 16 and no Dortmund, I mean, you know, Dortmund and Haaland, it's sad, really. But well done to Ruben Amorim, to Sporting, who've been worthy winners big time in that game. And despite being spanked by Ajax in the opening game in the group stage, 5-1, the way they recovered to then book their place in the last 16 is pretty remarkable. So
tell you what. I wonder if they're 1 point behind in the Bundesliga. Of course, they play Bayern in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, none of the Borussia Dortmund players, they seem to have a problem getting vaccinated.
Yeah.
So hopefully nobody tests positive. I wonder, might they be better off just being able just to focus on the Bundesliga?
Maybe, yeah, maybe. Although they're definitely not good enough to win it. I mean, I don't know what would happen. By the way, Pedro Goncalves, amazing again.
In that seven game. Goals in four, is
seven
it?
Seven goals in four. How long before he signs for Wolves? Just so we can tell Wolves fans. Exactly. Not long, Wolves fan. He's coming to you, for sure. Sevilla get a big win over Wolfsburg, 2-0 gap, to keep their hopes of qualification alive. This was really big for Lopetegui.
It really was. I mean, the second goal came at the very end, of course, but after the start that they had, they really, really needed this, and they're still in it. And it's been draining. They've had injuries, but the Lopetegui system is working. It's not always as pretty. It's not always necessarily Lopetegui football, but they gutted it out against Wolfsburg. A goal finished by Jonathan David, but made by a brilliant run from Lionel Andres Burak Yilmaz gives Lille a massive win over Salzburg. Gorvenek does it again. Come on. Can we have more love for Burak Yilmaz? Come on.
Really? No, it was not good in that game.
A man the size of a building that goes on a run like that, that keeps the ball stuck to his foot.
He literally ran into the wall and somehow the ball ended
that
up.
That was awesome. That was Jordan Howard, baby.
Amazing for Lille, really. That win and then the win away at Sevilla in match day four were fantastic. The team spirit, the work ethic, because in terms of within the performances, it was not that great, I thought, against Salzburg. But they did it. They did the job. That was enough. And we see now everybody can still qualify in that group, which is incredible.
Yep.
Sevilla, Wolfsburg, Salzburg, Lille. So match day six will be very, very fascinating to follow. But Lille have given themselves a huge chance now before going to Germany. Malmö scored their first Champions League goal and the first one in a very long time and get their first Champions League point against Zenit as he finished a 1-1 gap. I guess they can thank their keeper, Jonas Dahlin, for saving Artem Zubia penalty before conceding another goal on penalty.
This is weird. They took the lead. They almost seemed like surprised, like in their celebration.
Yeah, it was a great goal as well.
Tremendous goal. It was funny because they get the Zenit get the penalty late on the second half. Zubia goes up. The guy saves it. The ball comes back out to Zubia. Zubia seems so shocked. He looked okay. I know that those of us who are taller going to look uncoordinated at times.
Exactly.
But you don't expect such a weird body movement from him. Anyway, they did get the second one. Zuba did not take it. And they equalized 1 point. Yeah. Party in Malmo.
Yeah.
Now, Jules, remember Leonardo Jardim?
Oh, yeah.
And we saw, by the way, can I just take a step aside about the quality of Portuguese managers right now? There's another one we're going to mention a little bit later who truly is special. But they just have so many. Anyway, Leonardo Jardim, we thought he was going to be the next big thing in Monaco.
Yep.
Well, he's just gone on. He's the champion of Asia as Al Hilal win the Asian Champions League, beating Pohang Steelers 2-0. Your man, Bafé Gomis, happy.
The assist on the second goal scored by Moussa Marega, the former Porto striker. Paris born and bred, Moussa. Well done, brother. That was really good for them and for Jardim, who somehow has to rebuild his career after what happened at Monaco. You're out, you're back in, you're back out, which I don't think was
easy. Can you just explain this for people who may not know? And maybe if Ed, if you're listening, he might be available. Maybe. Because that Monaco team were really, really good. Yeah, now, they had great players, and it's a bit of a gray area how they all end up there, but they kept cycling through and leaving, and the new ones came in, and they were super, super good, and everything. He was being linked to all these massive jobs. Okay, he comes back, and it falls apart. But what happened? Why did he end up on some weirdo blacklist that he has to go to Al Hilal for the ducats?
I don't know what happened. I think his return at Monaco, so the first stint, as you said, amazing. Then
Did he leave?
He was sacked, things didn't go well. They thought it was the great idea to bring Thierry Henry to replace him, of course, which we saw how that turned out. And then thought, we panicked, let's bring Leonardo back in, except that I think he works in a very particular way, Jardim. A lot of things have to be under his control, which is fine. A lot of managers are like that. But I think there was a point in Monaco where that was not on anymore with a lot of people at the club, and even less the second time, which was a big mistake, I think, to bring him back the second time, hoping or thinking it would be like the first team when they won the title with this incredible generation that they had. But he's still very good. And I know people are going to say, but this is only the Asian Champions League. Well, it's not only. This is a big competition over there, and he's doing a really good job with Al Hilal. And I just hope that soon we'll see him back in Europe. That's all. I think he deserves it.
You still have to go win it. You can't bring in 11. This isn't like the Premier League. You can't have 11 foreign players, right? There are limits on the foreigners, with all due respect to Marega and Bafé Gomis. It's not like he brought in, you know, Mbappe and Haaland to the front line. It's still impressive. Honestly, I think United could do worse than to at least take a look at him. Yeah. If you're looking at Valverde and Rudy Garcia and Lucien freaking Favre, why not take a look at this guy too? He's got time on his hands now.
Completely. It's not just Karim Benzema who gets himself in trouble with the justice. Former Perugia, Fiorentina and Juventus striker Fabrizio Miccoli has been sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. Gab, what happened?
Well, it's funny. First of all, it's a good gauge of French justice versus Italian justice. You were complaining that the Benzema case was 6 years old. Well, this case is 11 years old. Fabrizio Miccoli, who was something of a cult hero, remember him.
Of course.
Sort of short. He had a tattoo of Che Guevara because Maradona got a tattoo of Che Guevara. So why not? He also has a tendency to hang out with some rather unsavory people. When he was at Palermo, there was an issue where there was a guy who was like the former groundskeeper or something, and of the team, who somebody owed him money. He befriended a couple of people who were in the mob, or sorry, suspected mobsters, and who were being, because they're suspected mobsters, they were obviously their phones were tapped and their cars were tapped and the police were listening in. And on several occasions, he suggested, he asked this guy, hey, can you help me? Because my buddy over here at the stadium needs to recover 12,000 euros. Can you help us out? Can you help convince the guy to pay him back and whatnot? Not the smartest thing to do.
Not the smartest move.
This is a prison sentence. Yeah, this is very real. And I think I'm correct in saying he's exhausted his appeals as well. So always watch the company that you keep.
Yeah.
Arsene Wenger's plan to reform the international match calendar is getting a tweak. Didn't get much love. People focused on the bi-yearly World Cup, but a big thing was also, hey, let's have fewer internationals outside of major tournaments. And I think, unsurprisingly, and we'll hear more about this, a bunch of national teams in FA said, well, wait a minute, you know, that may be fine. England don't want to play this many matches. Great. Well, what about us? We're Tanzania. We're Montserrat.
Exactly.
We only really come together to play international football. This is going to cost us money. So now he's reducing in his new plan, I think, has six internationals in October.
It's getting worse.
Four in March. No love for Wenger?
But like, oh, what a surprise, Arsene. Oh, well, you thought your ideas was genius and everybody would be behind me and it would be great for everyone. Look, we're going to play all the international in October, it was. And this is it. And that's it. And after that, you can focus on your club. You'll be less tired. You'll be less this. Come on, just go and work on your plans again, because this is not happening.
This is how these people literally make money, as they play games for the national teams. And now he's like, well, at least he recognizes it, right?
I know, but it sounded so patronizing.
He's listening.
All right, okay. Napoli lost 2-1 at Spartak Moscow in the Europa League that was played on Wednesday afternoon. But Gab, Luciano Spalletti went viral post-match. What did he do?
So, by the way, here's a chance to mention another Portuguese manager doing well, Rui Vitória. So he was angry because Rui Vitória didn't shake his hand before the game.
Pretty much, yeah.
The video is hilarious because after the game, Rui Vitória goes up and reaches out to shake his hand, and Spalletti brings both hands up.
No, no, no.
Like, Luciano, don't play that, right? Everybody's favorite goblin, Mr. Kurtz, whatever you want to call Spalletti. He did have a point. He said afterwards, like, I'm not shaking that dude's hand. He won't shake my hand pregame. Why should I shake it after the game when he's won? Which I have a little bit of sympathy with Spalletti. Kind of has a point there. Sky Germany are reporting the Borussia Dortmund want to triple Erling Haaland's salary to around 18 million euros a season. Now, that's only, though, if he agrees to ditch the release clause in his contract.
Of course.
Should he even consider this?
Of course not.
Do you think Mino's laughing when he hears this?
Mino is saying, okay, 10 times more. Do it 10 times. 10 times and maybe we think about it. No, sorry, Dortmund. If you agreed to sign him and put that release clause, you didn't have to. You could have said, you know what? If you want a release clause, well, sorry, but we're going to go and sign someone else. You put that release clause. Now it's there, and it's there to stay, because it's not in Erling Haaland's interest, even less in Mino's interest, to say, oh, yeah, let's waive that release clause and then see what happens. Even for more money, Erling Haaland has plenty of time to earn 20, 30, 40 million a year.
No, and I think the point that they're also missing is that Erling Haaland isn't some dude who grew up in impoverished circumstances and needs the money now to settle his family. True. His dad was an international footballer who played many years in the Premier League. So I think he has a slightly different approach. It's why he went to Borussia Dortmund, because he can take a long-term view. He doesn't need to chase the money straight away. So, I think they're going to laugh at this.
Potentially a huge story in England, Gab. We could soon have an independent regulator with wide-ranging powers over football after a government report recommended a number of steps that include, for example, a 10% tax on all transfers with overseas clubs, as well as the power to impose spending limits. Gab, what's this all about? Do you think that could really happen?
So this is something that came about following the Super League, really. And there was a lot of popular calls from people in football. I mean, Gary Neville's been campaigning for this for forever, saying, like, let's have an independent regulator. And what this means is, in the same way that, for example, your electricity company here, if you live in the UK, but I think most parts of the world, it's a private company.
Yeah.
There is an independent regulator that sets rules on them on what they can and cannot do. They can't jack up your prices. Your gas company can't jack up prices 200% in winter. Ha, 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 let's make some money, right? So there are certain rules. There are certain regulations. They call it independent regulator. Well, dudes are appointed by the government. It's actually government regulation where they say this is a common good. So electricity, gas is a common good. And in
which
the same
is a good
way,
thing. Which is a good thing.
Depending on your point of view. It depends if you're on the free market end of the spectrum or if you're on the other end of the spectrum. If you view football as a common good, then you would see this the way Gary Neville says he does. Then you would view this as a very positive thing.
Yeah.
And it's important because in 2024, the agreement that the Premier League had with the Football League, which is the 92 clubs from the Championship down to League Two, that agreement expires. And that agreement involves the Premier League paying solidarity payments and paying money down the pyramid. So they have to reach a new deal, basically. And the Premier League, obviously, they don't want an independent regulator. A 10% tax on transfers with overseas clubs, for example, that would be pretty heavy.
Yeah.
They could get involved in how the money is distributed. So I think there's going to be, now these are recommendations, I think these are the more extreme recommendations. The Premier League will push back, they'll try to fight back, they'll meet somewhere in the middle. But it is a big step, and I think it tells you the general mood about the Super League, that, you know, there's a story that they like to tell in Turin and Madrid, especially Andrea Agnelli and Florentino Perez, that, oh, it was just, you know, Boris Johnson deciding to, the British Prime Minister deciding to cater to fans by destroying this and it's illegal in the market. No, no.
Yeah.
This is actually the government taking real steps to get behind it.
Yeah.
I find this a fascinating topic. I've already spoken about it too much, but it basically speaks
to, it's good. It's
should this just be business? Should this just be entertainment?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Or is this more?
Yeah.
Jules. Yet another Portuguese manager.
There you go.
You can never have enough Jose Mourinho.
No. Nope.
Now, he had promised Felix Afinajan a pair of his favorite designer sneakers if he scored, and he duly did. He came on. It's tremendous.
Yeah.
Came on against Genoa, scored two great goals. Yep. Now, I got to ask you, are you surprised that the sneakers that he wanted, and which Mourinho helpfully told us were super expensive, 800 euros,
they are.
But they were Balenciaga sneakers.
Yeah.
Now, again, you know more about this. I always thought Balenciaga was a woman's brand. I also thought those are some ugly-ass sneakers. Did you own Balenciaga?
You might not like them. They're very trendy. A lot of the youth, a lot of the kids love them. There's those socks ones. They're called sock shoes because they look like a sock, basically, that go up all in one with no laces.
You're not actually meant to play any sports in them. You just meant to walk around.
No. Yeah, they're very light. They've got sort of like beat white sole. The one that Mourinho bought for Felix are the Speed 2-0, which is the sort of limited edition that just came out.
They're unmatched, by the way. They don't.
Well, no, it's just a bit of red on one, on the left shoe, then there isn't on the right.
It looks like something a Paris Saint-Germain player would wear.
A lot of footballers, trust me, wear them, and not just them.
Okay. Can you name a footballer I like who wears them? Ah, see, you're struggling. Okay.
No, I need to think. Like,
the colors look like PSG colors.
Yeah, right? They do. Okay. But I can see why Felix wanted them as an 18-year-old. This is very trendy for
the kind of thing you would have wanted as an 18-year-old.
They didn't exist in my time. But Balenciaga is really, really trendy now, by the way. Maybe you thought at the time it was a women's brand. But now, not just those trainers, but the hoodies, all the stuff is really, really trendy. I think Felix's taste. And if you're Sergio Reguilón, and you got some Serrano ham when you were so good against Riyad Mahrez, against against City with Spurs. You must be pretty gutted that Felix at 18 got the Balenciaga.
I think it might have been Jamon de Jabugo,
yeah,
more
maybe,
than Serrano.
But still.
The cinco
hosses. Parma ham, I was even going to say, or something like that. Mourinho's gesture was priceless, and Felix really sweet in how he received them. But was the video of Felix receiving the sneakers a bit tone deaf, Gab?
I think the video undoubtedly was, and this isn't Felix's fault. Obviously, it's obviously not Mourinho's fault. I expect more from Roma to not put yourself in the situation. When they show the video, you can hear somebody, as he's unwrapping the thing, you can hear somebody off camera saying, "Oh, there's bananas inside." Now, you have to. They came out. They explained it. Felix himself explained it. Oh no, it's because I really like bananas. I love bananas. It's tone deaf. In 2021, in the society we live in, to say to a young person of African descent, "Oh, yeah, you'll like it. There's bananas inside." It's completely tone deaf and it's completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
Whoever the guy off camera was, maybe he wasn't being racist in his mind, but this is going to be a really, really bad tone deaf look for the club, and they should have known better. Just as at the very end of the video, I was shocked. Everybody focused on the bananas comment, right? At the end, he's got his little shoes, he puts them on, and they're like, "Okay, now Felix, now dance, boy, dance." And he does a little, I mean, really?
I know.
Really?
But I'm sure they're going to say, but he loves dancing. Yeah, I'm sure he loves dancing.
I'm sure he loves all these things, and maybe this wasn't your intent, but maybe you should realize that you are a global brand. And
crazy.
You know what's surprising is, Roma's social media, there's a guy there who left, I believe he's in Paul Rogers, they were cutting edge, they were fantastic, won all these awards. They need to keep an eye on this now because, you know, you get a lot of unnecessary negative attention when you put the stuff out because, it's tone deaf. Northern Ireland and Switzerland, a big favor in holding Italy to a draw, enabling Murat Yakin's crew to qualify directly to the World Cup. So, Jules, what did the Swiss do to show their gratitude?
They sent the Northern Ireland FA some chocolate, Swiss chocolate, of course, to say, "Hey, well done, guys, for keeping Italy to a draw and to show our recognition. And, you know, thank you for your help for us to qualify directly for the World Cup. Here's a lot of chocolate for you to enjoy during Christmas, you know."
And they're a bunch of cheapskates. Wouldn't it have been nicer to go and just send them a couple Swiss watches, maybe a few Rolexes or something?
I don't know. That's you, because you are that kind of level.
Or no, some access to some numbered bank accounts? No?
I think there would be. I hope Northern Irish people, you're happy with the chocolate for now. Finally, we went through some of the contenders earlier for the United interim job, but we wanted to save Peter Schmeichel's suggestion for the end, Gab. And he said that Steve Bruce should get the job. I mean, before I slaughter the idea, you can go first.
Steve Bruce is his friend. He kept Newcastle up last year. If you want a logical suggestion, if you want exciting attacking football and not safety first garbage, then no, I don't think Steve Bruce would make a lot of sense. No.
The best answer I have to this nonsense is silence.
All right. There you go. There you heard it. Jules, that brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Monday because we have another full weekend of football. Some very, very big games coming up. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.